Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, David DeMoor. He's professor of political science at UNLV, for the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
I'm Brad Seidner, and we're keeping the legacy alive here at the Reno Rodeo. Come be a part of the legacy.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada. This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shad, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're always pleased to welcome back to the program David DeMoor. He is a professor of political science at UNLV. Pleasure to have you back on the program. It's been too long.
Yes, thanks for having me back.
Okay, so legislative session. Did Southern Nevada get their fair share? It seems like it.
Yeah, it was an interesting session. It's always good when there's more money than they expected.
Right.
So at the end, everybody got to play Santa Claus there. So certainly, the big projects down here were the medical school. And the governor comes in late in the session with a matching donation to get that
Do
project.
Do we have any idea who that is? $25 million? Wow.
They wanted to be quiet at this point. I'm sure at some point it'll come out, but right now I think it's just going to go below the radar there. So that was certainly a big one. You obviously had that being the key priority for Southern Nevada there. But obviously with education on the table, right, to the degree that they're going to mess with the funding formula and they finally got the beginnings of a weighted funding formula, that's going to help Southern Nevada as well. Those are sort of the big sort of money parts of it there. Obviously, UNR gets the engineering building, but there was two planning for the Nevada State Health Science Building and then also planning for UNLV engineering building, which in theory could be funded in 2019.
Were you okay with the way things turned out for the community colleges because they really wanted to break away?
I think it was going to be tough for a couple of reasons. I'm obviously an advocate for that. I think at this point the state's big enough that it can handle two separate systems there. I think there was a couple of issues with it is that, first of all, Ira Hansen carrying the bill is not a popular person with Democrats, so that was going to hurt him. The governor came out pretty early and said, if there's not support from within the system for this, I really can't support this at this point here. But I think it did sort of lay down the foundation for that. You obviously also saw on the funding side some workforce development money going in there. And now NCHE has, their meeting last week, finally put a head of community colleges in place there. So we'll see. You got 2 years out here, but I think there's a lot of momentum for that. And with a new governor coming in, perhaps that person will want to make that sort of a signature issue for them.
No announcements on the Democratic side yet, but it seems pretty obvious that Steve Sisolak is going to be the one.
At this point, yeah, there's obviously some noise about some other people getting in here.
For example,
I think some of the liberals are hoping that June Kiliani, another county commissioner, would get in there.
I'm hearing her for U.S. Senate.
Maybe that as well. And obviously Kate Marshall's had her name out there as well.
Do you think after her run against Mark Amity, she was a horrible candidate in that race.
And then lost to Barbara Sigaski as well.
I moderated that debate and I asked her at what point she was going to announce her membership in the Republican Party. She was going so far to the right, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, and I don't think she convinced anybody there. The problem for her is she's been out for 4 years, right? By the time she runs in 18, it'll have been 4 years there. She's not well known down in Southern Nevada, which is obviously where most of the voters are, particularly for Democrats there. So that'll be a struggle. And this is really the consequence of the 2014 and to lesser extent the 2010 election, where the Democrats just got wiped out in both of those elections here, took care of their bench. You know, Ross Miller was seen as an up-and-coming guy. He ends up losing. Obviously, Cortez Masto would have been somebody whose name would have been thrown around this time, and she had not run and won it 2 years ago there. But Kate Marshall losing, right? There's just not a lot of well-known folks there to sort of fill those slots. And I think the Democrats are pretty optimistic about what 2018 is going to look like.
Although there seems to be a war developing between the moderate Democrats and the Bernie Sanders Democrats. They are still, the Bernie Sanders folks, very angry that they didn't get their man.
And they are. And, you know, we've seen this obviously on the Republican side for the last decade or so, where you have this sort of ideological base that has a view of how they think the party should operate versus sort of the party establishment there that's much more interested in winning and gaining and holding power as opposed to putting forth any ideological agenda. We saw a little bit of that last time, even if you look at, for example, the Nevada 4th race, the primary there between Ruben Kuhn and Lucy Flores, that became a little bit of a surrogate race between the sort of Clinton establishment camp and the Sanders camp here. We'll see what happens. You know, we got a while till they have to file and all those kinds of things there. But certainly I think that the Democrats are going through that sort of growing pains whenever you're out of power. It's always hard to think the message is wrong, the candidates are wrong, and so on and so forth there.
The book Shattered is making a lot of waves about Hillary Clinton's campaign. Have you had a chance to read it?
I have not had a chance to read it there. Not surprising that that's coming out there. But I think that also goes to, to the point about the Sanders people. Let's just get beyond that. We're not going to go back and relive 2016, all the missteps there. Was it the emails? Was it the media? Whatever it was. I think most people really want to sort of move beyond that there. But obviously, the Clinton folks want to have their say.
Dana Titus on this program a couple of times now has talked about the possibility of running for U.S. Senate. Do you think it's different today for Dana than it was when she ran against Jim Gibbons?
Well, yes and no. I mean, obviously, the state's become a little more liberal, I think. It's tacked a little bit more to the left there. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's Clark County's not big enough that it's hard to win just from Clark County. And her reputation out in the rurals and even up in Washoe, you know, from her days in legislature, from that run against Gibbons, that's going to be really, really hard for her to overcome there. And she's in a really good position, right? She's the senior Democrat in the delegation. She's got a really, really safe seat here. Does she want to put that on the line and have to go spend the next 18 months fundraising, and doing those types of things there.
And also, she has seniority in the House.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So if the Democrats do have a run, she's going to be sitting really in a good position on transportation, right? And you give all that up, you know, for you know, Heller, you know, he's seen as vulnerable, but he's never lost a race at the end of the day. You know, in very, very different circumstances, the guy's always managed to pull it out.
Although the race with Sharon Angle in CD2 was pretty tough.
It was back then. And we saw him respond by attacking the right. And then when he wanted to run the Senate, he became a little more moderate there. Obviously, that race with Berkeley really hinged on her ethics issues, right? Because going into that early voting, I think she ended up winning that. But those last couple of days, that race just got hammered there. And there was a significant drop off in Berkeley's support from Obama, whereas Heller mostly kept all of Romney's voters.
Yes, it's going to be an interesting race. And I think interesting in the sense that how much of this will be controlled by third-party money and the message taken away from the candidates themselves?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen that in the last couple of cycles in Nevada, and now you're hearing noise about Adelson putting a lot of money into an outside PAC, the Koch brothers there. And the other side for the Democrats is they're not going to have the Reid factor any longer, right? Obviously, he'll have some influence, but not like it was when he was in power there. So they have some own questions internally about who's going to take the mantle of the state Democratic Party, who's going to be able to bring those resources, create those alliances that were so successful, particularly in 16.
I'm presuming that you get all the press releases I get, and it seems that Catherine Cortez Masto's press release department is in overdrive, has been since day one, and that she's trying to take that position of state Democratic leader.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say, and I think there's a lot of expectations that she should be doing that, right? She's got 6 years, and that's the beauty of the Senate. You're not up every 2 years there. You have access to resources, even if you're in the minority, that you're not going to say as you're as a minority House member there. And what was interesting about watching that campaign was, you know, Cortez Masto's sort of very, very stiff to start, right? Very reserved, very much the lawyer. And then finally in that last week or so, last month or so, she really seemed to catch fire, got really, really engaged. And that, I think, is really carried over here, made a name for herself, getting some national stories. I think there was one on CNN. She had a New York Times profile as well. So I think there's, you know, the turnover we see in the Senate, there's a real opportunity for her.
Let's take a break. More with Dave DeMore when we come back.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Your business workers' comp company should be your partner. The Pro Group customer care team brings you effective risk management, training, support, and web tools at no extra cost to you. We maximize the safety of your employees and business every day. Pro Group is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with information and resources at your fingertips. We ensure your employees' safety and that your premium's in line. When you're a Pro Group member, you have the team that's looking out for you. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you. Call for a no-obligation quote today.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with David DeMore. He's professor of political science at UNLV. Let's go back to the legislature for a minute. The permission for the RTC to now look at light rail along Maryland Avenue and the potential to see light rail going from the airport to downtown. I was talking to Virginia Valentine of the Nevada Resort Association, and she was talking about how we're looking at the possibility of the monorail expanding out to Mandalay Bay and being a hookup for all of the convention centers. Mm-hmm. But this light rail being a whole different deal. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, obviously you start looking at the amount of money. It's a tremendous amount to start. But, you know, the nice thing about Las Vegas is you have a pretty concentrated core, right? You have the airport right next to the strip. And then, you know, downtown's not that far away. So there is this potential to do it. It's taken a while to sort of get people to catch on to this idea here, that we could actually do public transportation in Southern Nevada. Cause I mean, we have a car culture out of Southern California here very much so. But I think particularly with the stadium coming in, there's people realizing, well, how are we going to get all these people into that tight space there, even if they just need to get across I-15 there? That's going to be a big disaster. It's going to be so. I think there's people rethinking this as well. You've had some fights with the county commission over this. Some of them wanted to do a elevated expressway to dump some of the traffic from the airport in there, but that's still, you're still doing cars in there. So I think that was exciting to see that come out of the legislature here. Obviously, funding is going to be the big issue, and there's obviously a lot of concern at the federal level. What's President Trump going to do on these sort of transportation projects there? He's made infrastructure somewhat of an issue, but there's the details haven't really come forth so far.
Well, and the ones that have come out have been a little interesting. About a fifth of the money, he talked about a $1 trillion investment, but now it's more like $200 billion and a lot of private money being put into that. There is an appetite for that, but doesn't that shut out people as well if you're building toll roads and other things that are profit makers?
No, absolutely. Absolutely there. And, you know, obviously we do need roads here, but once we complete the Beltway, that project's on tap here, the airport project's just about done as well, then you really have to start thinking about how we're going to move people around in the core. And that's the most efficient method here. And I think you also see a generational change. I think that, you know, you read the millennial folks, they want to live and work and play in the same spaces here. They don't want to be 10 miles out in the suburbs commuting in and out every day there. And, you know, I think, as again, you know, Reno's similar, right? You have a pretty concentrated core area with UNR there, the downtown there, and the burgeoning tech sector there. It sort of makes sense for Nevada to start thinking about this, because you only have to do it in those two cities, right? And you're capturing, you know, light rail for 90% of the population.
Well, you know, it's interesting too, because TRI, the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, is now positioning itself as a regional workforce center. They have a map that has TRI PRI at the center, and then all the surrounding counties. And but they are seriously looking at redevelopment in Lyon County, places like Fernley, Yerington. They're going out to Dayton with the freeway that's mm-hmm. opening up. And so there's a lot of development there. Do you think that things eventually ended up being fair in terms of the state putting money into Apex to make that more functioning?
We'll see. Obviously, there's a big concern about Faraday, right? When's that going to come
in? I was going to leave that out.
You know, so I think that, that's kind of been slow. But I think one of the reasons why that special session took a little longer was sort of the broader issues about building up Apex beyond Faraday, right? And you've seen North Las Vegas do a really, really nice job of bringing in some call centers, Amazon, some warehousing and then obviously Hyperloop.
Well, also, one of the things that I thought was interesting was I was talking to one of the members of the staff of the City Council of North Las Vegas, and they were talking about how they have they looked to Story County to see how their permitting process worked to make it easier for people to get projects up and running. And, you know, in Story County, you can get a grading permit the day you show mm-hmm. up. And so I think that that's helpful. Also, I think the secret to TRI was the investment initially of Roger Norman to put in $100 million worth of infrastructure. So when people showed up, it was already there. You didn't have to envision, were you going to have water, were you going to have power? But I think the state is now taken care of, or at least it's in the process.
And that was always the catch 22 with Apex. Everybody saw the potential there, but you didn't have the water. You didn't have the power there. And so figuring out a way to use, you know, what basically the model from Tesla as a way to sort of how can we put in this infrastructure, at least if people come here and know that they're going to be there and they're not going to be on the hook for this. That was a big part of that. Now, think about, you know, a couple of cycles ago in the legislature, they were talking about taking over North Las Vegas here. And now it's a little bit of a success story here, how far they've come in a relatively short period of time and doing it, you know, putting in, instead of having people just simply commute into Las Vegas, they're actually having people live and work out there.
Yes, John Lee is to be congratulated for a remarkable success story. We have to go to another place, but first we have to take a break. Dave DeMore, right back.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators. From the exotic to the everyday. Trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with David DeMore. He's a professor of political science at UNLV. Got to ask you about the Trump presidency so far.
It's about what I expected. Nothing sort of really surprised me. There's a great book, one of the sort of first books on the modern presidency by Richard Newsted. And he has a great line there. It's something to the effect of the presidency's not for amateurs, right? You just simply don't walk in without any experience and expect to be effective. And we've seen that in foreign policy, domestic policy, just sort of little protocol things and just sort of the basics of how the government works in sort of getting caught by surprise when they're sort of somebody brings us up to them there. And then obviously, you know, I think, you know, it's fair to say they didn't expect to win either. So they hadn't done the homework they would need to for their transition there. And now with some of the scandals, I think they're having a hard time attracting the talent and filling in a lot of those openings there. So it's been sort of, you know, presidency by whack-a-mole, whatever the problem is that emerges today, we're going to respond to that and we'll get to deal with tomorrow. But you don't see any sort of big vision of where they're going.
Well, and I think and your point is well made, is that, you know, you can't do things like health care or changing the tax code. These are not simple things. These mm-hmm. are not sound bites.
Exactly.
And it requires not only compromise amongst the legislators and the president, but also the thousands of lobbyists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, particularly on both of those areas. Yeah. And this is something, you know, Trump, yeah, corporate guy, but he's also a private corporate guy, right? There's a very different between running a publicly traded company where you are accountable to a board, you are accountable to shareholders, right? So there is that sort of governance model, if you will. But when you're privately held companies, you can pretty much do whatever you want here. And I think, you know, he's used to saying, I want this out of the other thing, and it sort of happens. But you're absolutely right. You're trying to establish policy that affects lots of different industries, and each of those industries is going to want to protect themselves.
What do you think, and this has been talked about quite a bit, is if, for example, he suddenly loses Rex Tillerson or James Mattis or H.R. McMaster, and they leave as a group, where does that leave the president? Because there are not a lot of people lining up to take these jobs.
Yeah,
if they become available.
And that's a real concern, right? And maybe at that point it becomes, wow, maybe I need to start rethinking how I do business here, right? That these are important positions here. I can't have my small White House staff, the few people I actually trust in government, doing all this kind of stuff there. I mean, he tried that with his son-in-law, right? Putting him in every little emergency that came up. Oh, Gerald, take care of it. Gerald, take care of that. And now you see he's gotten caught up in sort of the Russia stuff as well. And again, he's someone no experience either in government there. So I think that's the concern. And, you know, the Republicans they're still holding out for their judicial appointments. They're still holding out for taxes.
Which is their best shot, by the way, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, once they get those, you know, there's a lot of openings there. They get those through, then they start to think about their 2018 calculus and their 2020 calculus there. But I think your point's well taken, is that you're not attracting good people. You're not putting forth names to fill these positions here. And what happens inevitably when you do have this turnover? Who's on deck? And I don't think anybody's quite clear, you know, do you go back to the Bush administration? Do you take Obama people and you said, you know, they were the problem and all that kind of stuff? You put yourself in a little bit of a box there.
Well, and, you know, some of the advice came from very good people. For example, for Tillerson, you know, James Baker, Henry Kissinger, people that had vast experience and knew that this was a guy to mm-hmm. put in place. I thought it was interesting. There was an interesting story in the New York Times the other day about Tillerson, that he was in New Zealand when this whole Qatar thing blew up. And he had to make a stopover on the way home in Hawaii for 15 hours because he was flying a small plane that only had one crew. And so they had to rest up. But the reporter also pointed out that the small plane, as well as saving money, also didn't allow that many reporters to be on the plane. He's got to be the most quiet Secretary of State ever.
Absolutely. And again, this is a guy who comes from the corporate world, right? Not a lot of experience in government, used to running a huge multinational corporation. Now, all of a sudden, you're the country's chief diplomat here. There's an expectation, I think, about the press corps that he would be much, much more open on some of the foreign trips. He's ditched us and this kind of stuff there. And I think that frustrates and it creates even more of an adversarial relationship between the administration and the fourth branch, fourth estate.
And I think the bottom line is here that we all wish Donald Trump success because the president's success is the country's success.
Oh, absolutely.
But wow. David DeMoor, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Come back soon.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back.
I'm Brad Seidner, and we're keeping the legacy alive here at the Reno Rodeo. Come be a part of the legacy.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature Build Your Own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Remember, you can download podcasts of the show free of charge from iTunes. We'll see you on the next broadcast.